Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio and YouTube Podcast, streamed live from the heart of Washington, D.C. Here, you'll find a portal to vibrant voices, echoing souls, and an ongoing celebration of the extraordinary power of language. So, prepare yourself to join host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram and his special guests as they explore traditional and spoken word forms of poetry.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. Tonight, we welcome back a cherished member of the QLPORYT family, acclaimed poet and author Todd Cirillo. Todd hails from the city of New Orleans. He will be reading from his latest poetry collection, Disposable Darlings. Welcome back to the podcast, Todd.
Hey, Mr. Michael. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate
all right.
You.
All right. Are you ready to begin this poetic journey?
Oh, of course. Yeah, always.
All right. Your book is titled Disposable Darlings. What inspired the creation of this particular collection of poetry?
With this one, surprisingly, it was probably the title. And so originally, I was just going to have a collection of all of my sort of unpublished stuff, and I was just going to throw it in and say, well, you know, who the hell cares? I'm just going to put it together, and it's just going to be a bunch of, like, disposable darlings. And then, but then what happened was last spring, all of a sudden, I was inspired and I was encouraged and I was pushed forward by another poet. And within probably 6 weeks, I had the manuscript of mostly all the new poems, and it came together as Disposable Darlings, which has a lot of meaning for myself. And that's how that came about, was this just magnificent springtime where I finally decided to focus on it and do something with that title, which I adore. I adore the title.
Well, tell us why you adore it. Give us some more. Flesh that out, folks.
It's got a lot of great feedback. Mainly, I just think Disposable Darlings can come down to myself, that, you know, I'm tired of being a disposable darling. It could come down to these, like I said, it originally started with these poems that are just sitting around and you don't, you're not really doing anything with them, but they're still little darlings. So you might as well do something with them. And it has a nice bite to it because it's also fairly subversive in a way. Almost the two words don't really go together, you know?
Right. I guess I assumed that the disposable darlings were women. Darlings were women.
Oh, my.
I didn't think about poems
God, no.
being darlings or yourself being
yeah.
a darling. Wow, that yeah. broadens it for me.
Oh, yeah, no. That. No. I mean, maybe there could be some inflatable women. Or,
right.
You know, inflatable man, hey, I don't judge, man. I don't judge.
Neither
so,
do I.
Yeah.
All are welcome.
Yeah. And of course, though, that is the cover for those of y'all. I mean, I know you can't see the cover right now, but it is three of varying sizes blow-up dolls, all three named Judy. Yeah.
All right. So when you think about creating this cover, tell us more. Walk us through the creation of the cover.
I worked with the same photographer that has worked on my last three books, the magnificent Carrie DeMay out of New Orleans here. And she is just extraordinary. And essentially how it happens is, I sort of say, here's, you know, this idea I have, and then I'm open to her kids, and then we go around in various places. And this, the original photo shoot was happening on a third floor balcony of this beautiful building in the French Quarter down here. And we were getting some good shots, and then we were told we had to leave the balcony because apparently the musician Todd Rundgren was staying in the room where we were on the balcony of, and he needed to take a nap or something like that. So anyways, we got kicked out from Todd Rundgren. And I would have thought he would have found, you know, two people with blow up dolls and a couple drinks on the balcony at 4:30 in the afternoon in the French Quarter, New Orleans. Pretty
right.
Funny, but you know, everyone needs sleep, so that's okay. And, and then, well, so then we try to look for sort of locations, and when we sort of wear ourselves out and we say, well, ain't nothing working, let's go get a drink at such and such bar, then it happens. And that's what happened here. Finally, we said, well, let's call it a day. Let's go to this bar, Harry's Corner. And I said, I'll buy her a tequila shot. And all of a sudden, then we took the Judy's out, put them in there. We were the most popular people in the bar for that afternoon. And then we just go through, you know, various ideas. And then somehow it's always just one that for sure captures it. And that's what we got. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really still like, and then I send it to, the magnificent poet and graphic designer, Julie Valin. And she does all the, she does all the designs, for my books, which I'm appreciative of. But yeah, essentially it's just going out and having a good time,
all right.
Having a good afternoon and, you know, trying and failing. And then, something comes out of that, you know?
Yes, it does. As I look at the cover, in more detail now.
Yeah.
These dolls are inflatable. Are you saying that are you saying that life is inflatable too, and we can deflate it at a moment's notice, or it can be deflated at a moment's notice?
Well, then if that was a life lesson, then I would have learned the wrong life lesson, because these dolls took a long time to deflate and a longer time to inflate. So you know, you really got to put in the effort, I guess.
Yes.
No, it was good. Yes. This is just, you know, they got Mardi Gras colors on the cover.
Yes, they do.
This book, I've had more people come up to me and tell me that this cover somehow represents me the most out of all my books. And I don't know. I don't know. I just leave it to them, you know.
You leave it to
I don't think I want to know, but I take it as a compliment, because it looks like a fun scene, and it looks like people, dolls are not looking for love, and then there's, you know, it's a beautiful old bar, Mardi Gras colors, you know, people are having a good time.
So this book contains your artistic vision. Correct?
Oh, no. Go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, that's the question. Does this book contain the integrity of your artistic vision? You feel good about it once you've finished it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this one especially. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, this one. Yeah, like I said, this one, because it came about so simply, and it was going in a completely opposite direction when it was just me thinking about it. And then, like I said, really over the course of about 6 weeks, just through pure and gorgeous motivation and inspiration, this book came together, and everything that is in it, I'm proud of. I would never, ever put a book out just to put a book out. And I would never just jam a bunch of poems in there just so I could get to, you know, 200 pages or something like that. And really ain't nobody going to read a poetry book, you know, beyond 110 pages anymore either. And why would someone want to subject another person to that?
It's true.
Beyond
it's
me.
True.
Yeah. I mean, if you cannot read a poetry book from cover to cover on a plane ride, or during a happy hour, then I I think that's a bit too much.
All right, then. Yeah. So, in Disposable Darlings, what do you write about? What are some of the predominant themes of your work?
Predominant themes are searching for shiny things, shiny moments. You know, it's the search for interpersonal connection and love, affection, and what to do with that when it does not exist, or when it goes away, or when you are so hopeful for it. It's just, you know, really, I think I'm an observational poet. And so it's just going around and checking things out and putting myself out, like I say, on the railroad tracks so that you can be in the place. I really don't understand writers who just stay in one place and they write in a little room, or, you know, it works for them, which is great, but it could never have for me. And so essentially it's just a walk around town. That's how I view it.
Walk around town. Well, my friend, now let's listen. Everyone out there in listener land, it's time for some poetry. Todd Cirillo, you're on.
All right. Just visiting. We fall in love every time she comes to town, which isn't often, just enough to hold hands for the first time once again, smile and recognize where we belong. The trips are always too short and the clocks tick too loud. Each meeting, we always agree to share everything. Our words, feelings, depth of emotions, food, beers, and bodies, what ifs, hopes, and realities, to leave nothing untouched. However, the moment she is gone, a thousand unsaid words and phrases appear in desperation, fearful that they will never be heard. No forward plans are ever made, only a whisper of, I will return. When she drives away before the sun rises, I am devastated again, not able to take watching her fade into a day I will not be a part of. So I go back to sleep to dream a different ending. Slut shaming. It was a wild one, that much I know. Now, first light of morning, unclear how we arrived in these unfamiliar surroundings. Clear on what happened, though, clearer still on the consequences that await. Trying to be quiet, I say out loud, you fucking slut, as I wash my face, avoiding the mirror. Lawrence Ferlinghetti is smiling. The poet and publisher Lawrence Ferlinghetti has died. 101 years of stories, one in a million moments and memories stored in his Coney Island mind. Gone with him, forever lost. A chapter has ended. For the literary world, it is sadness. But I bet he's smiling, considering it a respite from 68 long years of opening the Daily Mail to terrible poets sending their best bad poetry with handwritten notes howling to him about how they are the next big thing. Useful poetry. I read the poet's new book and saw this line, waiting for something, hoping for anything. It is the type of brilliant phrase that will stick with people when they read it on buses and trains, if people still use buses and trains. But I'm confident that this book will be read in airports by people going to see other people or those who are getting away from everyone. It will have significance during breakups and given as gifts to impress. It will be quoted at weddings and funerals. Lines will be stolen by those who call themselves poets. It will be opened over and over again and again, and it will be opened only once and placed on a shelf with other books with crisp spines and unstained pages. Don't take it personally. Pages will also get covered in gin and tonics, baby food, spaghetti sauce, birthday cakes, dark chocolate, red wine, and white Russians. Other times, this book will solve problems such as an unbalanced pool table or a crooked washing machine. Don't take that part personally either. it may not be what you hope for, but just remember, poetry is supposed to be useful. That's it.
Wow. I'd like you to read that last one again, if you don't mind. Useful.
Oh, all right. Useful poetry. I read the poet's new book and saw this line, waiting for something, hoping for anything. It is a type of brilliant phrase that will stick with people when they read it on buses and trains, if people still used buses and trains. But I'm confident that this book will be read in airports by people going to see other people or those who are getting away from it. Will have significance during breakups and given as gifts to impress. It will be quoted at weddings and funerals. Lines will be stolen by those who call themselves poets. It will be opened over and over again and again, and it will be opened only once and placed on a shelf with other books with crisp spines and unstained pages. Don't take it personally. Pages will also get covered in gin and tonics, baby food, spaghetti sauce, birthday cake, dark chocolate, red wine, and white Russians. Other times, this book will solve problems, such as an unbalanced pool table or crooked washing machine. Don't take that part personally either. It may not be what you hope for, but just remember, poetry is supposed to be useful.
Which lines in that particular poem, Todd, did you feel most proud of in terms of writing the lines, or felt most challenged by to write them?
Oh, this one rolled right out because that was an actual line from another. Okay. Yeah, that waiting for something, hoping for anything, that started it, you know. The sort of process and dread that some writers may have while trying to put a book together or something, or having a new book, you know, come out, reading their manuscript. And then, I mean, I think just the line, the poetry is supposed to be useful. I enjoy that one because, again, but people want it to be useful in the way they want it to be useful.
True.
For, right?
True. Yes.
But,
yes.
Hey, you know, if you can help someone steady a crook, you know, wobbly table, well, all right then. At least everyone will see your book when you sit down.
You know, the reason I asked four line, and you chose the one that I was thinking about, and about poetry is supposed to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what comes to mind is, how useful is it? People feel like poetry is dying. What's your take on that statement?
I think they're firing the hearse up, that's for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I definitely do not feel that it is what it once was.
Okay.
And
what was it? What was it, my friend? Tell me. You know I like talking to you. What was it?
I think that it has to. It's been evolving and changing, and some things, you know, there was a. Again, you know, Allen Ginsberg's Howl sold 1 million copies. There ain't a poetry book out there today that would sell 1 million copies. Maybe there is, and I just don't know about it out of my own, you know, ignorance. However, the majority are not. And so it evolved into, say, you know, spoken word, poetry slams, and now those kind of have ebbed and flowed, you know. And now it's just kind of been taken over, like you have Instagram poets, right? And so if you look at that hashtag, they're just lines, right? They're just one sentence. And most of the time, they're not even a well-written or well-thought-out. It has become too accessible in a way. Like anybody, it's become too accessible, and then it also has become where there can be no debate. I put this out. You offer me likes, you tell me how amazing it is, and then I'm going to put out more stuff, but not really get into revision or, again, I think it comes down to you know, quantity over quality a lot of the times, right? So you have people who are just getting in now, you know, okay, I'm an Instagram poet. Here's what I do. I just throw these words out there. When it really is a craft, and to me, in my opinion, it should tell a story. There should be a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Okay.
And above all, it should be understandable.
Yes, I agree with
again,
that.
Yeah, my philosophy is if the poet has to explain their poem, then they have failed the audience and the reader. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, I just don't think that you can ask anybody, well, what was the last poetry book you bought? Ask 10 people out on the street and see what the answer is, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
So when writing this book,
mm-hmm.
How did you organize the poems?
As far as the order of them in the book?
No, the organization, are the sections or by specific themes?
Oh, no, I'm not a fan of sections in poetry books.
No.
So
organization.
Oh, yeah, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you, no, there is an organization to it, absolutely. But... you know, again, I prefer to perform. And so when you're performing and you go one, blah, 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 two, blah, 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 three, it destroys the natural rhythm, not only of the performer, but also of the audience as well. You're getting into it. You're getting into it. You know, it's like leaning in for a kiss and they turn their head at the last minute, you know, or something.
Well, I've had that happen.
Yeah, oh, of course.
More than 100 times.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so what I do is I look and I honestly consider every single book and manuscript that not only that I do for myself, but for other people and putting it together is I think of it as a record album. You know, or a concert, if I was going to do a set, well, what do you come out with? What do you end with? Where's the middle section? Where's the, you know, two thirds of the way through where sort of the, we'll call it the weakest couple songs kind of go in, you know, there's always a couple fillers and, but there has to be a rhythm to it. It has to be a ride. I couldn't take like a whole grouping of poems that are just like super depressing, right?
Okay.
So you read it because then if you're a good writer, then the reader is going to feel some kind of way. So mm-hmm. the reader, you know, might pick up on that and you know, I don't want to put someone through that. I would like them to put the book down and go, wow, this is great. I'd like to read more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's how I put it together. I think of it as a record album. I actually think of it as music, or a concert.
I never knew that. You know, we've been around each other for a while. I never knew that. I did.
Mm-hmm.
I like learning new things. I like learning new things. Thank you.
Yeah.
But I've got to ask this so we can keep going. So even if it was a theme and the themes were primarily sad. Couldn't a reader still say, I want to read more because I relate to that?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, anything I say is by no means probably not wise or even, you know, something, but...
Don't worry about it. You're on the right show.
Well, you know, again, it is good to present sadness, but there, in my view, you know, there's enough sadness in the world. And I understand people write to bring out their own sadness as you know, a cathartic sort of experience, which is great. I'm just saying for me personally, you know, it can be like listening to Pink Floyd. I can't listen to Pink Floyd all day or else I'm going to feel some kind of way. And it's not going to not make me entirely the individual who I wish to go down the street with, you know?
Okay. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I do understand. Let's hear some more of your work.
All right. The golden boy of the Midwest. While some patrons sat at the bar, there he was, up on stage, reading his poems about death, decay, the depression of being raised by a daddy who didn't love him enough. Most of the audience up front were shouting and yelling in support, crying and throwing their hands in the air, wanting more death, begging for more decay, popping their own antidepressants, and gathering material for their new poems about a daddy who didn't love them enough. The rest of us ordered another round and hoped for death too, but not for the same reasons. Deprivation. I fight sleep to avoid waking up to one more day without you. Luckenbach, Texas. I have reached the point of becoming a goddamn country music cliche. I sit alone in a dirty bar in ripped jeans, trucker hat, light wallet, surrounded by old torn posters, faded chalkboard, blinking half neons, a dusty bottle of root beer schnapps not touched since 78, and busted dreams drinking cheap beer and strong shots, listening to Waylon Jennings sing about Willie and the boys, and I know all the words. These kinds of situations make a person reflective. I realize my life contains most of the classic elements, wrecked trucks by loves long lost, stranded in the rain without bus fare and no way home, thrown in jail 3 times for being cheated out of my money and my heart, left for other men, and if I'm being honest, the occasional woman too, had all the light bulbs in my house methodically busted out one by one, had a shotgun pointed in my face, and when she said it was loaded, I took her word for it. But I don't ride horses, wear a giant bucking bronco, belt buckle, or even own a dog. Yet here I sit, at the far end of the bar, with an open tab, living it up, writing the next chorus. Just me, Waylon, Willie, and the boys. Moving in. There are 4 chambers to the human heart. You have moved into each one of mine. I hope you relax, stay a while, get comfortable. Feel free to leave a toothbrush, some clothes, your favorite books, anything you'd like. No need to clear anything out. There is plenty of space. The place hasn't been lived in for years. That's, there you go. There you go.
I'd like you to select one of those poems to read again.
Oh, well, I'll go with the
Waylon, Willie. I like that one.
You like that one? Okay.
I'm not trying
all
to
right.
force your hand,
okay.
But I like that one.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Luckenbach, Texas. I have reached the point of becoming a goddamn country music cliche. I sit alone in a dirty bar in ripped jeans, trucker hat, light wallet, surrounded by old torn posters, faded chalkboard, blinking half neons, a dusty bottle of root beer schnapps not touched since 78, and busted dreams drinking cheap beer and strong shots, listening to Waylon Jennings sing about Willie and the boys, and I know all the words. These kinds of situations make a person reflective. I realize my life contains most of the classic elements, wrecked trucks by love's long lost, stranded in the rain without bus fare and no way home, thrown in jail 3 times for things I was completely guilty of, been cheated out of my money and my heart, left for other men, and if I'm being honest, the occasional woman too, had all the light bulbs in my house methodically busted out one by one, had a shotgun pointed in my face, and when she said it was loaded, I took her word for it. But I don't ride horses, wear a giant bucking, or even own a dog. Yet here I sit at the far end of the bar with an open tab, living it up, writing the next chorus. Just me, Waylon, Willie, and the boys.
You know, when I listened to that piece the first time, I was like, The second time I heard it even more. There's a certain punchiness to that piece. And it made me wonder, is that because you are a performer, performance poet as well, is that your voice where the punchiness is, or is it the poem itself? I mean, because you read it with a flair where it could seem like anger or that you're mad or upset with some of the events that happened. Tell me more about that poem and writing it.
Oh, that one's all me. Yeah. Yeah, most of that stuff is all true, even if I made it up. Yeah, but that poem is true. That poem was written right down the street here at the Garden District Pub. And it was really Waylon was playing, and I just looked around, and that was that. And, I don't know if I should be ashamed or exalted, a sense of pride for that poem, but yeah,
it's great.
That's
great.
Yeah.
It's great because
yeah,
you remember the movie Network. I think it was in 1976 or 1977, and there was a news anchor, and he made the statement, "I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore." And that kind of, everybody was just crazy over that. That's how it sounded to me. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Oh, really? Wow, yeah. I thought it was
I'll send you a clip on YouTube.
Yeah,
this is very famous, very famous, very famous, because everyone out in America heard this news anchor make this statement. They thought he was crazy. What was wrong?
Yeah.
Why would he say that? So when I listened to you, that's what came to mind, that I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
That's funny because that poem actually makes me laugh. And and there's a recorded version of it that you hear me laughing throughout the poem. Because I am smiling now just reading about it and thinking about it.
All right, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to know, when you write a poem like that particular one, what comes first? The title or the poem?
Oh, a line from the poem, but it always arrives as like a Polaroid photo. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything in words; it's just an image, right? So, like that one, I was really sitting at the bar and I was by myself, and like I said, the song was literally on. Mm-hmm. Like it, yeah, I don't think I'm that deep. And so, so then I see it in an image.
I disagree. I disagree, my friend.
Okay.
I disagree.
Well, right.
Very deep.
Well, then I see it in the image first, mm-hmm. and then I just see what, how to put that image into words. And
so who's writing you or the poem? Who's writing it?
I think that the, I think it's got to be a good collaboration because you at least have to be aware of when those images combine. Say, oh, that's a really good one, or that one's not. Yeah, so it has to. Yeah, it's got to be a good partnership between the two. I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very nice. I agree. Very nice. Very nice. I'd like you. We're going to take a quick break, but I'd like you when we return to share with me the titles of five poems in the book. Okay?
All right.
All right. We'll be right back. We are back. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. I'm here with Todd Cirillo. Todd, five titles, my friend. Five titles from the book.
All right. Stacking the Deck, Bent Corners, Magnolias, Poetry Suckers, and the Cosmic Jukebox. Or Saints of the Neons. Yes.
Right.
I'll take Saints of the Neons, yeah.
Right.
Well, that was six, but there you go. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
500, Alec. Little.
Yeah.
All right. All right. The reason I ask, you know, some people feel that a poem does not need a title. You know, you just need to read it. For others feel that titles are important. What is your take on it?
I think titles are extremely important, and I think that they're actually, well, I think they're beneficial. Right. Because it's for a couple of reasons. One, I think it helps set up what's to come. Now, it can set it up for to be exactly what it is, or it can be the complete opposite. So it can throw the reader, you know, it can take it somewhere where the reader didn't even consider just based upon the title. And to me, it's like a book cover. Right. So if you have a good title, you want that to draw someone in. Same as a book cover. Why not have a book cover that's going to stop somebody and say, ooh, you know, what's in between these sheets, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's another creative exercise. Like, to come up with a good title, I think is an extension of the creativity. I think not to have a title is just not for me.
So is it also a Polaroid picture in the title?
Some can be, some could be, sure, you know, yeah, some could be. It's always nice to, you know, be proud of yourself when you come out, ooh, that's a good title, you know, I like that.
Yeah. You have to say it yourself, that's true.
Correct, yeah.
Right, because if you don't toot your own horn, who else will? You know what I'm saying?
So, right, yeah.
That's my motto.
Yeah.
You
know,
right,
just just as confident as you are that say, hey, man, this is a good title. You know, like I have about three people that I consider the best editors for my work. You know, I send them some and I say, hey, this is great. I have to be okay with them coming back and go, well, it's not great, or it could be a little bit better, or think about this way or that, you know. You have to be okay with that. If you wish to be an honorable and true writer, you got to be okay with it.
Wow. Please share some more of your poetry.
All right. Past life of a pirate, sitting on a deck having lunch, reading poems. I hear parrots somewhere above me. I look up, then around, this way and back, unable to spot them, but they call out. It must be the pirate part of my personality that attracts them, teasing me with reminders of what I could have gotten away with. Their songs and squawks cause me to drift and float away to ports of palm trees and sea breezes, hidden treasures, a map full of X's that I've never found, but feel like home. Title song. Ever since the very beginning, she was there. She is responsible for my love of love and my obsession with music. Even after all the years in between, she remains my title song. From the first note, you want to drive fast on a dirt road, stay up later than the stars, turn the volume way up until it becomes the one that gets stuck in your head, remains there all night. A soundtrack to your dreams, an alarm clock to your sunrise waken, a melody of memories on repeat, choruses of hand-holding, B-sides of heartbreak, encores of extended jams, the one in a million magic that separates a hit record from mere background noise, the special one that ties the entire album together, makes it a classic, and when it surprises you on the radio, you smile and begin to sing along. Saints of the Neons. It matters not what bar, any town, anywhere. It is where us serious drinkers talk shit and gossip, backslap and bullshit, yet hold one another tight when the time is necessary. And if two weekends pass, we wonder where you've been. We've broken up in front of the beer taps and busted our faces at happy hour defending someone's honor. We have seen kids grow up and marriages grow old. Lives born and lights go out. We've heard every jukebox tune 1,000 times, sometimes in one sitting. We have over-tipped to be over-served, have woken up with the hair of the dog and passed out when the sun shows its face. We have done shots and been shot down. Down pints and puked in the garbage cans, embarrassed and absolved ourselves over Jaeger bombs and Bloody Marys. Here we are equal, equally lost, equally broke, equally awe. And we look almost innocent under the neons. We spend hungover holidays on barstool thrones where liquor bottles stand like gods under Christmas lights, providing us gifts we didn't know we needed. Even though Sunday mornings can be brutal without a hint of redemption, we crawl back to the neons, full of confessions and contrition, where we never have to order. The bartender simply has it waiting with a beer back of forgiveness, and that feels better than church to saints like us. And one, because it's springtime, Magnolias, on top of him, focuses on her quick breaths, the rhythm of her body, her hands tightening, the side to side of her hip bones, hair falling off the shoulders, the curve of the ribs holding her enthusiastic heart, eyes lowered to his. It is spring. The jasmine are in bloom outside, along with the magnolias she loves so. With a hushed voice, she tells him, "I like that." He kisses the inside of her left wrist, knowing every spring he has now will feel like her. That's it.
I'd like you to read the second one again.
The second one, man. You're picking all the. This was a set. You're picking all the longest ones, huh? No,
that's the one with music.
Which
because
one?
To me, it was
oh,
you
the title
talked
song.
About the music. How, yes, mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. That one's not
I don't mean
in the
to make
book.
You
that's
work,
a,
man.
No, that's okay. Yeah, that one's not in the book. That's a new poem. But
okay.
Title song. Ever since the very beginning, she was there. She is responsible for my love of love and my obsession with music. Even after the years in between, she remains my title song. First note, you want to drive fast on a dirt road, stay up later than the stars, turn the volume way up until it becomes the one that gets stuck in your head, remains there all night, a soundtrack to your dreams, an alarm clock to your sunrise waking, a melody of memories on repeat, choruses of handhold and B-sides of heartbreak, encores of extended jams, the one in a million magic that separates a hit record from mere background noise. The special one that ties the entire album together, makes it a classic, and when it surprises you on the radio, you smile and begin to sing along.
Wow. You know my question. What lines in that particular poem did you celebrate off of writing? Or were the most challenging, either one of those? I have an inquiring mind. I want to know.
That one wasn't too challenging. I like she's responsible for my love of love. I like that one. I think
like
that one's pretty good turn of phrase.
The first one, it's in the first verse.
Ever since the very beginning, she was there. She was responsible for my love of love and my obsession with music. Even after all these years in between, she remains my title song.
Yes,
that's the first.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
Well,
I
thank
really
you.
Like that.
Thank you. Yeah.
And also because you are a musician, in your words, that particular one, I don't know. I just see you in it. Just based on what you've shared tonight in terms of your love of music, I just see you in it. That's a very well-crafted poem. Very
well-crafted. Well, thank you. Yeah,
yes.
I appreciate that. Yeah, see, now I can put that on my poetic resume. I got a compliment from a doctor.
Hey, I'm just another brother trying to make
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that, too. Now I got two things on my poetry resume.
You too much, man. As you think about this book, this particular poetry collection, are you hoping that your book resonates with a broad range of readers, or are you targeting a specific audience?
No, it's for everyone. That's and that's really just my style of writing is for everyone. And I get the biggest kick out of when, you know, MFA poets or, you know, esteemed individuals who have went through the system like that, you know, they sneak little pieces of it sometimes, you know. Sometimes they'll sneak and buy the book, and I enjoy that, you know, I enjoy that. That's high praise, I think.
To me, there's no reason for anyone to sneak and purchase your work. It stands up to anyone, in my mind.
Well, thank you. All right.
What do you think your work, my friend, conveys about the human condition? What does it tell us?
I think that we all are looking for connection in one way or another. Connection is the key. And sometimes we find it and sometimes we lose it. But we're always, some of us are always moving towards that. And I think, you know, and I also think it's always easier for someone else to read about someone else's misery or their, you know, pain. And it's just like, you know, hearing a song about breaking up. It's always easier to put our own feelings and emotions into a work of art, be it a song, yes, or be it a poem, or be it something like that. And I think, you know, so I guess that's what people can use it. Take the book. Go ahead. I've told people before, go ahead. Tell people you wrote this, you know.
So if you had to provide guidance to someone before he or she or whoever delves into your book, any advice? I guess you just answer that question.
Yeah, I would tell them that the poems go better with a couple drinks.
Okay.
Take it out to the bar, you know, or bring it to your family Thanksgiving dinner and break it out, you know, before the pumpkin pie. That's what I would say.
You know, I can't remember whether I asked you this question the last time you were here. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice? Or is there a relationship between the two?
Oh, I think it's exactly, I think it's the same. I always strive for, you know, whatever I put on the page, I want to be able to bring to life on the stage. There's, I think there's no, more challenging thing to be than to be in the audience when someone just gets up there and they just, you know, look in their book, or now, you know, they read off their phones and they don't do anything. So to me, that means they don't consider this entertainment. I consider it, above all, it's entertainment, you know. Poetry, the written word, started around campfires and whatnot to entertain those, to, you know, to bring feelings and emotion to it. And I think it's an insult to the audience when you get up there and you just stare at one thing and there's no bringing to life of those words on the page. It makes it tough to.
I remember. I told you the story when you were first here. I don't know. But when I started sharing poetry on stage, and my stuff was so different than everyone else's, or I guess it really was. But I was in this reading where this poet, she was reading about the Spanish flu in 1918. All right? And there was someone
uplifting
behind us snoring, okay, while she was reading.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it turned out that the person snoring was the one selling her book. And I said to myself,
yeah.
I said, I'll never put anybody to sleep.
Yeah.
I will never.
Uh-huh.
If I have to dance around like James Brown, I will never.
That's right.
anybody to sleep.
Yeah, yeah. And it's almost sometimes, you know, because I host poetry readings and mm-hmm. you know, there's open mics and stuff. And almost like sometimes people have to, you know, they have this almost an idea or a stance that just by me getting up on the stage should be good enough. Well, right. No, it's not, you know. Again, and I don't take it that seriously. And that's why I can view it as entertainment, you know, get up there and entertain the audience, give them something to leave with. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah.
Do you have any more poems in you?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Some more. Please.
Yeah. All right.
Share.
Okay. Plate tectonics. I watched a documentary on YouTube and learned that approximately 100 to 300 million years ago, there was one single supercontinent called Pangaea. Side note, dated a girl named Gia. It was not super. And there was one vast ocean that covered two-thirds of the entire planet. Eventually, the world shifted and the continent split. Pieces floated away in opposite directions. Some eventually came back together after millions of years in between to form new continents and landmasses that held together. Others turned into mountains that became single islands in the new seas. You and I are like that. And I am still a single island floating here, waiting patiently for another million years or so. Down on the corner, I watch the couple standing on the corner. She leans deep into him, as if sculpted there by their own dreams and hopes. The sky pure blue, the sun burning heavily overhead. There is no crying today, not a hint of winter on its way. Only the sun, sky, and a girl leaning against a boy as I drive past. Souvenirs. Nowadays, all those loves, those real attempts, sit like souvenirs on a high shelf, with memories and moments piled up around them, taking up space. I take them down and dust them off every once in a while, and hold them tightly, letting the big feelings wash over me like a rainstorm, trying to get back to those places. But souvenirs are just things we hold on to, from places and people that fade away in time. And besides, who wants to be surrounded by reminders of all the pretty places we will never return to again? How's that?
All right. All right. You know, your books include Sucker's Paradise, Burning the Evidence, Roxy, Three for the Road, Kisses from a Straight Razor, and now Disposable Darlings, published by Roadside Press. Make sure.
Yes, amazing. Michelle McDaniel. Amazing. Publisher.
All right.
Just
very
fantastic.
Nice.
Small press. Yeah.
Very, very, very nice. So with all these books, what did you learn about yourself, my friend, from writing this particular one? What new insights did you discover about Todd Cirillo?
I think that there's no there'll be no storybook ending for myself, and so I'm sort of bound to write books like these. I probably have some more in me, so this is sort of the trajectory that I am on. Yeah.
That was kind of a downer, buddy. I mean, no.
Well, I mean, I have a good time writing. Don't get me wrong.
All this uplifting talk
saying.
All night long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, if you continue to write like this, it's
yeah.
a storybook ending. Because you're reaching out to a whole bunch of people. Whole bunch of people, my friend.
Yeah, I don't see my style changing drastically.
You know, I'm going to spring something on you. You know, I shared in the promotional information that you will be featured in a Poetry Lovers Concert sponsored by Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, and YouTube. So what I like to do, mm-hmm. and this is what I've been doing lately, at the very end of my show, I ask my guests to participate in a mini MINI poetry concert where you share two or three of your works, short or long, back to back, with no interruption from me. No questions.
All right. All right.
Cirillo, you're on the stage.
The deal. It used to be that we had sympathy for the devil, a man of wealth and taste, style, strength, and substance, something of notice. When the devil wrote a song or poem, it stood out, way out, on the edge, like a dirt road or dark alley. It wore a black leather jacket and ripped jeans, smoked non-filtered cigarettes with a shot and a beer chaser, eight ball in the corner pocket, carried that someone's getting lucky tonight swagger. The words written with diamond precision and total indifference of whether people took notice or not, but everyone always did. The words were that good. And when the devil made an offer, you took it as a serious compliment. Now, there is sympathy for mediocrity. The whole scene gone viral, blogs created, words written casually from safe spaces with soft landings, but yelled with suffering intent. Everyone insisting that they have something important to offer, some secret knowledge about how to live, how to eat, how to say hello, how not to offend, how to be cleaner, how to write poetry, how to be meaningful or most righteous. Whiny vanilla angels offering weekly threats of exiting social media or life, only to repost again within minutes, putting out new art by the hour, naming themselves prolific without care for content or quality, counting likes as Pulitzer Prizes, pushcart nominations as victories, producing work that truly equals all the other nominees that bravely hit post with their brand new, unedited, first draft masterpieces. I prefer to reserve my sympathy for the devil, because the devil maintains standards, never deals in mediocrity. The devil remains one of the rare ones who, no matter the consequence, always deals in style, substance, and taste. And I'll end with this. Poetry suckers. I am proofreading her book of poems, which will be published this year, and smiling at all the idiot men who will read it while seriously believing that the poems in the book are all about them. But I know who they are really about. At least that's what I tell myself. Ta-da!
Where can readers purchase your book?
Well, through Roadside Press, and it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Roadside Press is like magicaljeep.com. You know, and I fully say, please, please, please support please support small presses. Yes.
Right. Very nice. Yeah. So, looking ahead, what's next?
Yeah.
What's your next creative endeavor?
On March 29th at 7 p.m., if you're in New Orleans or in the vicinity of the Gulf Coast, I'm having my book launch for Disposable Darlings, and it's called Poets with Drinks. And there's myself and Nikki Ummel from New Orleans as well. And then we're bringing in Julie Valin from Grass Valley, California, and Lindsay Garcia from Emporia, Kansas.
Right.
And yeah, and then after that, just some more readings. And there was a press that wants to do a new and selected poems of mine. So I got that to look forward to.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you're phenomenal.
Well, thank you. Right back at you.
Because to me, you've honed your craft so well. Because your work stands up on the page, on the written page, but you also have mastered how to share it, recite it, perform it. And that's a double whammy that everybody cannot do.
Well, I really appreciate that.
No, I'm serious. That's always been something that I've strived for. I mean, I can say it, yes, but does it stand up on the page, on the written page?
Mm-hmm.
You do that. You blend that so well. Really, really do. You really
Thank
do.
You. I appreciate and that.
No, you're gifted. You're gifted. So much success with the book, your next project, whatever. I'm just glad you're here with me tonight, one of my favorite people, and I look forward to seeing you with this Poetry Lovers concert sometime
of
soon.
Of course.
Hopefully.
Yep, cannot wait for that, and we're going to do our best to make it the number one poetry podcast in,
okay.
in the country. Yes.
No, in the world, man, in the world.
Well,
not just in the country,
see,
in the world.
I
You
I told
may not
you
have
my
fairy tale
my,
ending,
stand,
but
my standards are much lower. Yeah, my goals are simple.
I got to work with you, man. I got
yeah.
to work with you. Well, all right, man. I want to thank you. The book is Disposable Darlings by critically acclaimed poet Todd Cirillo, published by Roadside Press. Wow. To the listening audience, as I share with you every time we're together, let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land. Good night, Ty.
Good night.
To yourself.
Thank you so much. All right, buddy. All right.
Still craving poetry? Hundreds of episodes of the quintessential listening poetry online radio and YouTube podcast are available to listen to or download on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming platforms. To learn more about this popular podcast or how to become a guest, visit www.qlporyt.com. Till next time, take care and let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land.